Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going to dive right into where we left off. Other than the fact that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. Now, I know that there's a lot of people that every once in a while, somebody says, hey, I go to RepublicReview.org and there's nothing there. It's not that the domain doesn't exist and it's not that it's available. The fact is we've not set that site up. But it looks like if we have the outcomes that we're looking for this coming election season, then we will be in a position of actually standing that up and preparing that for the states to take ownership. Each state will own its own page and be able to provide the details necessary for what they're doing regarding Republic Review. And if they don't take ownership of it, then we'll try to figure out how to ensure that you can actually go and see where each state is in the process, whether they're auditing, what their findings are, that type of thing. So anyway, one of the things I probably should do that I don't do because I just want to get into the business and I don't, you know, necessarily think about the important things. And one of those things is to thank you, because if it wasn't for you, this message would not be getting out. There is no more powerful message available than that of taking back control of our government and getting people informed and getting them involved in this concept called, you know, actually it's self-government is what this is. It's the epitome of self-government, holding our general government, those who are our public servants, accountable. Even at the state and local level, we need to start holding them accountable. I go through all these things all the time. And so even though we don't cover, you know, the tamale, as Jerry Doyle, the late Jerry Doyle used to call it, the grapefruit of the day. Oh, well, look at what's going on here. Look at what's going on there. And as a matter of fact, I might as well tell you, we are in the throes of trying to get some videos up so that you can start sharing these videos with others that actually educates people regarding the Constitution. You know, like this concept of being able to constitutionally protest and go out and stop the flow of commerce and take away the civil rights of the citizens in that vicinity is just unconscionable. The framers didn't create a system that would allow insurgencies or insurrections to rule us. This is why in the Whiskey Rebellion, that was basically an insurrection. And it fundamentally, they were violent protests. Some people, you know, got their houses burnt and so forth. And I'm here to tell you that you don't have a constitutional right to get out and block the streets, block the sidewalks in protesting. And what we are witnessing, you know, for several years. I mean, this goes decades of watching these protests. Now, these are illegal protests. If you want to have a civil unrest, the only place where you can actually place your civil unrest civilly would be at the seat of government. In other words, right there at the stairways or at the entranceways or inside the chambers, we have a First Amendment right to petition our government and demand that they address our grievances. I mean, that is your constitutional right. It's not your constitutional right to deny the civil rights of others, the right to their own property, the right to be able to conduct commerce and access to commerce. When you see these protests, just think of all the people that are being economically impacted, and these people don't have a right to do that. It's almost the same as robbery. They're having their liberties taken from them by these hoodlums. You know, and even if it's the Tea Party out there protesting, they don't have the constitution. It's time we start setting the example and actually start marching upon government and petitioning them and demanding that they address our grievances. They actually are constitutionally accountable to us, the people, and they're supposed to actually address these grievances. And if you talk to Bob Schultz, he'll tell you that they haven't been responding. They've been ignoring us because they've convinced you that all you've got to do is get out on the street. And he who squeaks the loudest, and anybody that's backing with money, those screechers such as Soros and so forth, then they're the ones that are actually going to be able to get, I believe, the traction, because they're going to import. I mean, there's a lot of money behind these protests over the past several decades. They've become very organized, and it is a part of the Bolshevik Revolution machine. I've been telling you this. I've been telling you a Bolshevik Revolution is coming. And I'm not the only one. I don't know who else has, but I'm sure that other people have recognized this. And when I've talked to people, oh yeah, I've recognized that. And I go, okay, great. I just know that here I have been telling you that we are being set up for a Bolshevik Revolution. I've just told you of reason that what we're witnessing and these protests and so forth actually are, as you would say, dry runs. And actually, they're not just dry runs. These are protests that are actually to break down. And go look. I challenge you to go look at the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. They did exactly what they meant to do. They would start setting up stages to make people look like, oh, the police are a bunch of thugs, the way they've gone after these people. That's just terrible. And so what they do is they start, what we call it today, defunding and downscaling, but they actually reduce the police force and enforcement and protection services in Russia to a point where the Bolsheviks had full run of the streets. And they were able to get away with looting and all the crap that you see going on. You know this is illegal. You know this is just wrong. And you have to be completely frustrated with the fact that nobody ever gets held accountable. There's a method for this. And there's a way to take this on. We'll talk about that. I promised you we will talk about that. But there's the content that's far more important that we need to get into. And so where we left off, we've already covered the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions, and we also just covered the Kentucky response. In other words, Jefferson's response to the states failing to actually stand up and do their obligated duty in demanding compliance to their constitution. So, therefore, what we're going to do is we are going to actually take up or pick up where we left off. And we're in the middle, actually we're in the beginning of Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions. And this was actually in January of 1800. And as I was telling Keith Broders just the other day, that when you read the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, you cannot look at them in a vacuum. If you do, you might make the critical mistake, even though I think the evidence is there just in those two, even in the one, even in Jefferson's resolution or even in Madison's resolution standing alone, the evidence is there. But when you actually look at all four of these documents in addition to what they ended up doing, there's no doubt in my mind, nullification was not the intent. And it was, as I always say, it's a perfunctory process, what you've got to do. I mean, when you find that there's a law that has been created that conflicts with a fundamental law or a law that, you know, that protects us from those types of laws, then you have to identify, just like Jefferson said, this is the law is void and of no force. I believe that's precisely what he said. So anyway, now we're talking and now we're listening to what Madison was justifying in his report on the Virginia resolutions. And he basically went through the first resolution, resolved, and then he made his comments on that. So this is Madison picking it up, stating, in their next resolution, the General Assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the Union of the States to maintain which it pledges all of its power, and that for this end, it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction on those principles which constitute the only basis of that union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and public happiness. The observance just made is equally applicable to this solemn declaration of warm attachment to the Union, and this solemn pledge to maintain it, nor can any question arise among enlightened friends of the Union as to the duty of watching over and opposing every infraction of those principles which constitute its basis, and a faithful observance of which can alone secure its existence and the public happiness thereon depending. The third resolution, in the words following, that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument. Well, there we go. So we will pick this up, that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare. We'll start it off from right there so that we put everything into context. So when we come back from these two breaks, this is where we're going to start off. Thank you so much, and please stay tuned.
Are you a patriotic provider of a business that is looking to get exposure to a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so where were we? The third resolution, in the following words, that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of deliberate, palpable, and or blatant and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states, who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. I want you to understand this, that he's basically asserting that these liberties, these rights, the authority over this is actually a possession. This is something that they actually own. It's not just, you know, this idea. The states have had their liberties, their roles, responsibilities, and powers stolen from them by the federal government whenever they usurp these types of powers. Any power that is not within the enumerated powers, then the states have literally lost, or the federal government has taken the possessions, the property, and it doesn't even have to be tangible property. You got to understand that property equals your freedom of speech. When somebody tells you, you can't say anything, or we're going to arrest you if you use these types of words, or fine you, they have just stolen your freedom of speech that is guaranteed and protected by the Constitution. See, when most people talk about the Declaration of Independence and how it is the foundation, yeah, okay, it's kind of what got things started, but it was no guarantee that we had legal protection over our rights of expression, rights of conscience, and so forth. The Constitution, as best as they could, embedded those protections to ensure that our inalienable rights could not be infringed upon by the federal government. And with the 14th Amendment, those rights could not be infringed upon by our state and local governments as well. And if you get that, you will understand that the stay-home orders and all of these types of things where they've inflicted laws and rules upon us, or even these bump stock laws and rules, anything regarding the infringement of our ability to bear arms. And when I say bear arms, that's not hunting arms. That is military force and power. You must understand that the civilians, the militia, back in the beginning of this republic, they were the ones that had the artillery. They were the ones that had mortars. The citizens actually owned many of these types of weapons, and it was completely legal and actually was required as a part of their job as the militia. And if you go back to the Magna Carta and you go back to the early days of England after the Magna Carta, there was this responsibility. If you owned so much land and, you know, so much wealth, then you were responsible for having so many types of weapons and so forth. This is why the Constitution has galvanized not only just the militia, but the federal government's responsibility to equip and train and create uniform standards for those, for all citizens who are all citizens that are a part of this militia. We have completely perverted the intent of some of the most precious balances and checks that the framers have given us within this Constitution. So anyway, moving on this resolution, this is Madison again, on this resolution, the committee have bestowed all the attention which its importance merits. They have scanned it not merely with a strict, but with a severe eye, and they feel confidence in pronouncing that in it is just and fair construction, it is unexceptionably true in its several positions, as well as constitutionally and conclusive in its interferences. The resolution declares first, actually, you know what, it's probably important that we underline that, because you need to understand that when he just said that it is unexceptionably true in its several positions, as well as constitutional and conclusive in its interferences. In other words, he's clearly saying that this is the facts. This is what has to happen. The resolution declares first that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties. In other words, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution and that the Constitution is a compact to which the states are parties, not the federal government. Clear as the position must seem that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution, and from that alone, the committee the committee are not unapprised of a late doctrine which opens another source of federal powers, not less extensive and important, that it is a new and unexpected. The unexamination of this doctrine will be the most conveniently connected with a review of a succeeding resolution. The committee satisfied themselves here with briefly remarking that in the contemporary discussions and comments with which the Constitution underwent, and what does he mean by that? With the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, he's here talking about the ratification debates. Okay, I want you to understand that. Here he is again pointing to how this Constitution was defined. It was constantly justified. So he's basically telling you how during the ratification debates, this was defined, and he says it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. Do you understand, folks? If they haven't been given the power over housing, they haven't been given the power over discrimination, they themselves are constrained from passing any laws, but they have not been given the power over health, welfare, energy, education, and all manner of social engineering that they have been doing. Do you understand now? Here is a reassertion of the compact and how it was defined by the father of the Constitution when the Constitution was being violated. And in context to today's tyranny that we live under, this was a hangnail compared to the sucking chest wound that we're dealing with today. They were addressing a hangnail of a violation to the Constitution in contrast to the multiple sucking chest wounds that we are suffering from tyranny today. It was constantly justified and recommended on the ground and powers not given to the government were withheld from it, and that if any doubt could have existed on this subject under the original context of the Constitution, it was removed as far as words could remove it by the 12th Amendment. So what was the 12th Amendment? Technically, the 12th Amendment he's referring to is the 10th Amendment. The Bill of Rights, as you know, consisted of 10 amendments that were passed. However, what went out to the states were 12 amendments. The first two amendments were rejected or not fully ratified by the states. And actually, the very first amendment, not the first amendment that you know of in the Bill of Rights, but the very first amendment in what Madison sent out, or what the federal government sent out to the states to be ratified, that first amendment is out there that still needs to be ratified if we want to displace the swamp and we want to start moving forward in getting true representation, because representation would then be locked, that a representative in Congress could not represent any more than 50,000 citizens. You got 50,001 citizen. That one citizen gets their own representation. What they do is they'll divide it up. That way, the representation is capped. You can't tell me that with 750,000 people that a person represents, that they can know and understand their plight and understand what's going on in their area. I mean, the whole state of Wyoming is represented by one measly representative, and to be honest, she's a rhino. She's a big establishment. Liz Cheney is not a constitutional conservative. She's not championing the Constitution. I mean, she makes good points against the progressives, but those are all just talking points. But I digress. And so Madison goes on and says, now a part of the Constitution, which expressly declares that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited to it by the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. That's the 10th Amendment. That's what I'm saying. When he said the 12th Amendment, he was really talking about the 10th Amendment. You know, it's kind of like they decided to stop keeping track of all of the constitutional amendments that fell short. And this is strictly because there are quite a few out there now, such as the 1926 labor law constitution that failed, that Calvin Coolidge was a huge champion for. So anyway, when we come back, we'll pick this back up and get into more awesome insights regarding these resolutions. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so the next paragraph starts off with this. The other position involved in this branch of the resolution, namely, quote, that the states are parties to the Constitution, close quote, or compact, is, in the judgment of the committee, equally free from objection. It is indeed true that the term states is sometimes used in a vague sense and sometimes in different senses according to the subject to which it is applied. Thus, it sometimes means that the separate sections of territory occupied by the political societies within each, sometimes the particular governments established by those societies, sometimes those societies is organized into those particular governments. And lastly, it means the people composing those political societies in their highest sovereign capacity. So what he did was he just defined the state in three different ways. He defined it as sometimes political governments established by those societies within that vicinage or within that geographical area, and sometimes societies organized in particular governments. But lastly, What we want to make sure that you kind of catch here is that it also means the people composing those political societies of that territory or land. and in their highest sovereign capacity. So who is it that the people in their highest political capacity is? Who is that? Is that really all of the people together? No, that would be a democratic form of government. When it comes to the people, when he says compose the people composing those political societies, that is the representatives of we the people at the state level. Although it might be wished that the perfection of language admitted less diversity in the signification of the same words, yet little inconvenience is produced by it, where the true sense can be collected with certainty from the different applications. In the present instance, whatever different construction of the term states in the resolution may have been entertained at will at least concur in the last mentioned. In other words, he's talking about the people, you know, creating, or I should say, the people composing those political societies in their highest sovereign capacity. And he goes on and says, because in that sense, the Constitution was submitted to the states. In that sense, the states ratified it. And in that state, in that sense, the term states, they are consequently parties to the compact from which the powers of the federal government result. And again, it wasn't the people who voted. Everybody had a chance to vote on the Constitution. They selected delegates to represent them. And in that one fashion to ratify the Constitution. But the people still also elect every year their representatives at the state government to represent and to protect them from federal tyranny. The next position is that the General Assembly views the powers of the federal government, quote, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, and as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants therein enumerated. That was close quote. It does not seem possible that any just objection can lie against either of these clauses. The first amounts merely to a declaration that the compact ought to have the interpretation plainly intended by the parties to it. The other, to a declaration that it ought to have the execution and effective in the effect intended by them. If the powers granted be valid, it is solely because they are granted. And if the powers granted are valid because granted, all other powers not granted must not be valid. I'm telling you, these words that Madison is talking about, he's just reiterating everything I've been throwing out to you. And it's just like, you know, this guy is on the moral high ground. And when you compare his comments, his report compared to Jefferson, I mean, Jefferson used some hyperbole and, you know, it was very in context to, you know, what he was doing. But Madison, here he's teaching these guys a lesson. He's, I mean, whipping out the old, nun's sticks and whacking the ruler, right? The whacking you on the knuckles and, you know, it's you're doing this and doing this. And anyway, Madison goes on and says, the resolution, having taken this view of the federal compact, proceeds to infer, quote, that in case of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting of the evil and maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. It appears to your committee to be a plain principle founded in common sense, illustrated by common practice, and essential to the nature of compacts, that where resort can be had, no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties. Now this, I've been telling you this, folks, that the parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort, whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. Okay? I mean, this is big. This is really, really big. And so how else can I do this? But I just reread it. And he says, it appears to your committee to be a plain principle founded in common sense, illustrated by common practice, and essential to the nature of compacts that, where resort can be had, no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties. In other words, if you're going to have a conflict with the federal government regarding a power that they don't have that was reserved to the states and rightfully belongs to the states, he's basically saying there is no court in the world greater than the collective United States. In other words, collective states. When I say united, that's a little u. So when you put the states together in the process of republic review, you now have the most powerful court to force the federal government into compliance to their compact. Do you understand? Do you understand what Madison is saying here? Is he is completely reiterating everything that we're talking about, or at least that I have been talking about. And so going on, he says, rightfully judges in the last resort whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. So in other words, whether that treaty that had been made, whether it is an advantage or a violation, it doesn't matter. The states are the ones who have the final say. And he goes on and says, the Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states given by each in its sovereign capacity. It adds to the stability and dignity as well as the authority of the Constitution that it rests on this legitimate and solid foundation. Wow. I mean, okay. You know, this is like when I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld, when, you know, Jerry told George, you always want to go out on a high note. And then so George, you know, tells a great joke, everybody laughs, and then he walks out of the room because that's the high note. This right here is the high note, folks. This right here clearly states that only the states, not the sheriffs, not we the people, that we, the people of these sovereign states, must force our states to do their job. It's that simple. And this isn't rocket science. Once you start understanding the relationship of who we, the people, are and who our sovereigns are our duly elected folks. And yeah, we got a lot of problems, but republic review is that initial big domino that will fall, that will force all the other governments to get into compliance. Boom, 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 boom. And as we go along, we will rapidly be on a path of releasing tyranny and restoring liberty in America. It is that beautiful. I just want to take an aside. I want you to understand this one thing, and this is a very critical point. When the federal government is authorized very specific powers, and one of those powers is to be able to accumulate and or take on debt to be able to exercise their powers. If the federal government takes on debt in the concept of executing powers they don't have, they are committing fraud along with those who are contributing the debt. I want you to be very clear. If China and other foreign nations are buying debt to pay the federal government to throw this social engineering into us, that is fraud. And we, the people, and our constitutional republic, maybe the politicians, but we as a government are not accountable to fraud. The people who have committed the fraud, such as the Prime Minister of China and maybe presidents, as well as congressmen, as well as judges, the people that allowed this fraud to be perpetuated for the past 100 and some odd years. That's right, you've heard it here. This is a fact. This is a contractual fact. If you do not have the authority by that contract to take on debt to spend money on those things you don't have power to do, that is fraud. We'll be right back after this.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Does this really help? Does this really help frame the power that the states have? I mean, are you starting to get this concept of Republic Review and the position the states have within this constitutional republic? I mean, that's why we go through this content. That's why we go through the ratification debates. That's why we actually go through the first run of a true recognized usurpation where the two men with the moral high ground recognizing this unconstitutional government, that what they actually did and how they stood up, and they stayed within the boundaries of the Constitution. I'm just going to tell you that there is no other way. If you want your liberties back, this is how you do it. This is how they did it. This is not how GR just made it up. Now, I'll give you a little background. When I sat down and I wrote this back in, the concept came to me in about 2010. And the concept came as I was starting to read these things. Now, maybe as I, having read these documents before, and I kind of just marginalized them, and after listening to Thomas Woods or reading Thomas Woods' Nullification, it started making sense to me that the Constitution was a contract. And here I was sitting in this big meeting regarding a multi-billion-dollar contract, and we were having as a lead manager that was, you know, a part of schedulings and so forth with this huge program. We were all waiting for the VP or the director of our finance, which happened to be a VP of our business unit, walked into the room, and all of a sudden people, you know, because there was this noise, you know, how every meeting before it really gets started, people were catching up. What you got done? Are you doing this? Or what are you doing this weekend? All that kind of noise in the room. People were just chattering. And so when he came in and went up front in front of the table and stood up by the lectern and said, well, folks, and the room got quiet. And he basically says, well, folks, it looks like we might get audited by the federal government with our contract here. Instantly, a bunch of chatter. Everybody started, you know, asking questions. I mean, the noise level just kind of went up, to where I couldn't really even hear myself think. And while I was just, you know, I was just kind of stunned that we, you know, because this isn't good news when the federal government is going to come in and audit your contract. That kind of stinks of this impropriety that you might have done something wrong, or that, you know, and since it's a multi-billion-dollar contract, then it's one of those things where they go, you know, maybe they're looking to, you know, save us money and stick us with the bag, right? So anyway, what ended up happening was, while all this noise was rising up, I don't know if it was somebody in the room or if it was somebody in my head, but I clearly heard, and I believe it was a, you know, that inspiration, the divine hand of providence, that's, it just came straight and clear. Why don't you audit the Constitution? And that's why we started moving forward. Now, I never used the context of the audit with any of my books. I didn't want to simplify it, because 9 times out of 10, and it's happened way too many times when I've talked to people about, well, it's an audit. And they go, well, why don't you call it that? You know, the constitutional audit. And because it's not, so you got to understand, it's not just the audit. You got to, if you looked at the resolutions that Jefferson did in Kentucky in 1798, yeah, he audited the Constitution and then he asserted what we had to do. The audit only defines the discrepancies. The Republic Review, the audit is a big part of it, but it is not the ultimate part. It is not the part that forces compliance. Right? I mean, once you've been audited, there is usually a legal battle or what have you that puts you in a position of compliance and fixing variances, fixing budget, fixing schedules, what have you, whatever needs to be done, if at all possible. And that's when it's determined whether, you know, you will lose the contract, lose future access to contracts and so forth. But in context of the Constitution, when the states, as Madison clearly says here, that the states have this true authority, that collectively they are the judge and jury. Man, you have to understand why it has to be collectively, because does a single state have the level of political influence on the federal government to force them into compliance? No, you actually have to have a majority of the states. Where, and when I say a majority, I don't mean you have to have 26 states. You have to have a majority of influence in Congress. So in other words, you have to have greater than 50% of the representatives of the people in Congress from these states that are demanding compliance. So that's the only way you obtain political power. You have to have a majority influence and a majority of assertion. Does that make sense? I'm giving you the gold here, folks. It's the key to the mint. As Raymond Barone once said, here's the keys to the mint. But it's that simple. It is that simple. So he goes on and says, the states then being the parties to the Constitutional Compact, and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority. Could I say it any better? Could I say it any clearer? There can be no tribunal above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that as the parties to it, they must themselves decide. And he's talking about parties. He's not talking about a party, a single state. That they must decide in the last resort such questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. And I have already given you the keys to that mint of what they have to do. And this is all in Republic Review. I've really and literally laid it all out. If you've not read the bullet points, the argument for, and the bullet point process or the descriptions of the process and looked at the flow chart, go look. This is it. Here's how you do it. Now, the question is, how do we get these states to do it? It's a lot easier than you think. And this is why I've been focusing so much over the past, how many weeks, months, years, I've been telling you coming up to this election year, and I've been begging you to save money because we need to throw money into the campaigns of the challengers of the rhinos. We've got to at least get rid of the rhinos to at least start protecting ourselves. Secondly, we need to start demanding that those who elect us, if they want to be, you know, if they want to continue to be a servant for you, and more specifically, we need to pour the money into Wyoming. We need to pour the money into the Wyoming primary. I think the Kansas primary is coming up. We need to start looking at these primaries and finding the challengers. And I will promise that I will give you the names of challengers in Wyoming that I'm begging, I beseech that everybody contribute, whether it's $5. My preference would be that if you can contribute $50 to $100 to these campaigns, that itself will make a difference. Everybody listening, everybody that has even the slightest conviction of this, let me show you what the Lord will do if we get the right people who are humble and willing to serve and put everyone's interest above their own, because rhinos are self-interested. I'd say bastards, but actually, because, you know, it's male and female, we just have to call them corrupt politicians. Because the epitome of the corrupt politician was Clinton and Obama, and both of them were bastards, right? I mean, they were born, you know, and they don't know their actual father and so forth. So anyway, by definition, okay, I'm just talking about the actual definition. So here we go. Moving on, Madison says this. It does not follow, however, because the states, as sovereign parties to their constitutional compact, must ultimately decide whether it has been violated, that such a decision ought to be interposed either in a hasty manner or in a doubtful and inferior occasion. Even in the case of ordinary conventions between different states. Now, he just used the C word there. Did you notice that? Even in the case of ordinary conventions between different states, where, by the strict rule of interpretation, a breach of a part may be deemed as a breach of the whole, every part being deemed a condition of each other part and of the whole, it is always laid down that the breach must be bold, willful, and material to justify the application of the rule. So let me ask you, when they mandated healthcare and forced you to have to take and buy into what the insurance companies wanted you to support, when they basically married, you know, health insurance into government and started protecting that, then the same thing with labor, and in the same way with housing, and in the same way with education, are those willful and material to justify the application of the rule of disposing and dismantling these unconstitutional powers? Absolutely. Folks, we'll have to leave it at that. And so I just want you to understand that these are the most powerful words that we play on this show on a regular basis. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. We will be back with the rest of Madison's comments in our next episode. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.